I was meeting with some friends last week, and they said, you could do like one of those NPR things. You know, like, let's keep it short and sweet. We'll just pledge today and be done. Not doing NPR. One night, Isaac had a dream. He dreamt there was a great treasure, a collection of unimaginable riches buried under a bridge by the royal palace in the capital city. When he woke up in the morning, he told his wife about the dream. She said, maybe you should go and see. But Isaac shook his head. It was only a dream, he told her. Maybe you should go and see, she said, but it was only a dream, he told her. Once there was a church with great treasure, a collection of unimaginable riches, not buried or hiding, but filling with a bounty of people together in a beautiful sanctuary, sharing a dream that was not just a dream, and it was actually not once, but now. And it is real, this collection of unimaginable riches, right here, right now. Hearts and minds and bodies and souls, this is treasure. This is your treasure. Sometimes one must travel far to discover what is near. Home is always waiting. Home is here. You have inherited this gift from those who built it and sustained it, even as you sustain it still. But treasures, at least those that are not hidden and tucked away in some unreachable place, are not static things. Treasures like this one, like you all, have possibility and energy and agency. Treasures can make things happen. The question is, how and to what end? What is your dream for yourselves? For your treasure, how do you want your energy, your agency, your love and care to serve you? And who else would you want it to serve? This reality of unimaginable treasure, of love and service and joy and community, it is here. Like Isaac, how will you share it? I have to confess, when Amanda was reading the story this morning with the adaptations from Yuri Shulvitz's original, I was having trouble imagining the backyard and what a mess it must have been. All those neighbors digging and digging and digging, looking for treasure. Isn't it ironic that stories, that myths that we tell ourselves and remember about treasure so often focus on the silver and gold part, on the money part. Where I have just named your treasure as many things, I did not mention your treasure as gold and silver, the stuff that allows us to acquire things. That's not the ironic part, actually. The ironic part is that when we allow ourselves to imagine treasure as something else, like a room full of people who share love and service and joy and community, we know we still need the other kind, the practical kind, the money kind, to keep things going. And really, the super ironic part is that that's the kind we are least comfortable talking about. When I was getting married, or thinking of getting married, my mother, who I think often assumed I had wisdom I wasn't really sure I had, suggested there were three things that especially challenge the success of a marriage. Three things that a healthy relationship should be able to discuss. I was relieved that it was only three. And I wondered what they were. And I'm not 100% sure that I've got the ones she told me right, but I think it's close. So the first was religion, which she may have mentioned because I was raised in the Episcopal Church and I was planning to marry a Jewish guy, and she might have thought that was problematic. The second was sex, which she may have mentioned because she never mentioned it before and she thought she should. Before I got married. And money, which she also never mentioned before. And so she figured I should think about how she thought I would suddenly have the skills to master any of these topics was beyond me. But she may have decided that she had done her job simply by mentioning them. Good to go. So it occurs to me that there is a parallel between married life and congregational life. Like married couples, we make commitments to each other, covenants, promises, to celebrate our lives together, to care for each other, to be here for the long haul, in sickness and in health. With that in mind, let's consider my mother's three topics. So we often talk about religion here, right? And we're clear, again, as Sunil mentioned, we don't all have to agree. Sex is not on the agenda for today, sadly. But our children and our youth will tell you that they learn in our whole lives curriculum that we are sexual beings in the same way that we are spiritual beings and intellectual beings and emotional beings, and that we must be responsible to that. There is actually an adult curricula for our whole lives if anyone would like to participate. And then money. Now, there is a treasure we are very skeptical about bringing into the broader conversation. And I wonder, why is that? If it's such a big part of what determines our lives, often influencing our choices for how we spend our time, where we want to live, why is it so hard to talk about? They talk about money in the Bible, you know. In fact, I read on a blog the other day called What Christians Want to Know. I thought that was an interesting topic. They suggest that many would be surprised that Jesus spoke about money more times than he spoke about heaven and hell. In fact, it said, he talked about money more than any topic except the kingdom of God. So what did he say? In the Gospel of Luke, chapter 21, verse 1, as he looked up, Jesus saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. I tell you the truth, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. Or in the book of Matthew, chapter 6, verse 24, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Or later in Matthew, chapter 19, verse 24, again I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. It is interesting to me that in our largely Christocentric culture, we begin to understand from messages like these that having money, or at least the behaviors that appear to accompany people of wealth, is not a great thing, and actually a bit incongruous to a healthy spiritual life. And yet, we live in a culture that inclines us to think that money is actually pretty desirable, right? Capitalism is pretty much defined by that. Even before capitalism, being a person of means has probably fairly regularly been considered, culturally speaking, a good thing, a desirable thing. So I'm sensing a conflict here. No wonder we don't want to talk about it. There's clearly some judgment going on about who has how much and what they should do with it, and whether heaven is even available to those who amass any treasure of monetary substance. In our understanding of Jesus' encouragement to care for each other, even and arguably most importantly, the least among us, we have come to see wealth as a negative. And even for those of us who do not ascribe specifically to the Christian message, I would argue that this is in our culture at large. It prevails in this country, this tension between having and serving. So here's a solution. Shh, don't talk about it. How many people have you told recently? And this might include members of your family, even your children, perhaps. How many have you told how much money you have in the bank? Or what your income is? Or how much you spend on your newest pair of shoes? Or how often you go out to dinner and where? There are things we just don't typically share with each other, in part because it may feel like, one, it's nobody's business. And two, I think we want to assure ourselves that it shouldn't make a difference. We shouldn't be measuring or judging ourselves or each other based on our incomes or our degree of affluence. And the best way to assure that is not to talk about it. The irony being, if nobody knows, then who knows what they're judging on anyway? And if it doesn't really make any difference, why wouldn't we be willing to talk about it more? Is it simply a sense of privacy? Is it pride? If we have a lot of means, would we appear boastful if we spoke of it? If we haven't much, would we feel embarrassed or ashamed? If we're in the middle, would we feel invisible? We get these quiet messages very early on in our lives, like most of our patterns, from our families of origin. I remember one of my children commenting when she was small about some friends we had visited when all our children were young. They must be poor, she said. They don't have a microwave. A true measure of wealth, in her mind at least. But look where they live, I reminded her. On an island with such amazing beauty right outside their door. Who needs a microwave when you have that? Aren't we funny? The way we learn to measure. We share in community some of the most intimate parts of our lives with each other here, to varying degrees, of course. We celebrate our lives' rites of passage, our births, our weddings, our anniversaries. We grieve together in times of trial, when we struggle with health, when we lose jobs or partners. But we still struggle to have honest conversations about our financial lives. Who of us is in need? Who of us is finally staying afloat? And who of us has more than enough? We need to ask ourselves why that is. It is a rich, if you will excuse the term, and complicated tapestry that covers our capacity to be open about our varieties of fiscal treasure. I don't want to suggest that we should each bring our tax returns to share with each other, or that we must change our personal habits in order to participate in the financial life of this community. But I do want to encourage each of us to consider our habits and how they serve us and why. What would it feel like? How would it feel to you if things changed here? Because things actually are changing here, in fact. I am so very grateful as we all must be, to those who have carried the weight of pledge gathering and record keeping and thank you writing for so many years here, who have brought us to a place of stable and solid financial foundation. And I am so proud of your new stewardship team. These six brave people who have taken on critical conversation about the financial health of this community. Things like how to canvass and when, and what level of giving is needed, and who should receive pledge information, and of course, how long each of them is willing to serve on this team. Think about it, your time could come. This is truly work of the heart and spirit, learning a new way to be in relationship with each other. In our Unitarian Universalist polity, which is a short, sweet word for governance, we are the ones who fund this community, no one else. And like every privilege of freedom, it is both burden and joy. We have the freedom to be who we determine we will be as a faith community, as those who journey this life of our spirits together. And it gives us the responsibility to be caretakers of those choices. Jennifer Johnson, not to be confused with our Jennifer Johnston, reminded us earlier, these are anxious days, hair-pulling, hand-wringing days. We are bombarded from all sides with new and unprecedented developments, grave threats to our national values and institutions on one hand, and countless calls to attention on the other. These are indeed uncertain times. And yet, she reminds us, there are some things we do know for certain. We know that our Blue Boat home continues to rotate on its axis, continues its familiar sojourn around the sun. The sun sets and rises. And these are not her words. We know for certain we need your financial commitment to this community to carry on. In these anxious, hair-pulling, hand-wringing days, this is one thing we know for certain. Forward together is our aspiration and our invitation to each of you to joyfully participate in the life of this community by pledging your financial support. In my dream is the day when we can comfortably and openly celebrate whatever you choose to give, large amounts or small, each courageous act of generosity without fear of judgment. I dream of giving without judgment in the same way that we walk through these doors as tall or short, gay or straight, cisgender or trans, persons of all colors, all ages, all religious orientations, the only requirement that love be your guide. Do we remember how unusual this community is? Once there was a church with great treasure, a collection of unimaginable riches, not buried or hiding, but filled with the gift of people in all their inherent worth and dignity, together in a beautiful sanctuary, sharing a dream that was not just a dream. And they remembered together. Sometimes one must travel far in journey or discomfort to discover what is near. Home is always waiting. Home is here. And they moved forward together, only forward and always together. So may it be.